Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
As far back as I can remember, my father insisted that I had a special destiny. I was to follow in his footsteps and become a Walmart greeter. I remember one Friday evening, back when I was in kindergarten, when my father came home from a staff meeting. I ran up to him and asked, "How was work, Daddy?" His eyes lit up and he said, "I had the most amazing day at the most amazing job on the planet." Holding his blue Walmart vest in the crook of his arm, he gave me one of those effortless, one-armed wraparound hugs that made me feel both warm and loved. In my mind, being a Walmart greeter was situated somewhere between F-14 fighter pilot and Ninja Turtle. It was a career steeped in mystery that promised untold adventure. My father never attempted to dispel this illusion, never said the job was demeaning, and never suggested that maybe better occupations existed. I had no reason to doubt him. I adored him with all my heart. The notion that my father would lie to me was an alien thought outside of the realm of possibility. A couple years later in grade 2, our teacher sent home a newsletter inviting parents to come visit our classroom and tell us all about their careers. We heard from a nurse, a mechanic, and a plumber. After work one evening, I asked my dad if he wanted to speak to my class and tell them all about his career as a Walmart greeter. "Oh no," he said, shaking his head. "It is an immense responsibility that few can handle. Besides, if everyone had their dreams come true, it would no longer be special, right?" I was disappointed, but I understood. "Cheer up, my little raptor," he said, revealing a bag of assorted plastic dinosaurs. "Look what I picked up from work." Elated, I jumped up and poured the contents onto the kitchen table. I selected a jet black T-Rex and passed it to my father. "This is for you." "Thanks," he said. His broad smile was almost too large for his face. "I'll cherish this always." In grade 3, a new kid moved in down the street, a hellion named Colin. As soon as we met, he took a special interest in making my life a living hell. I remember it was recess, and I was sitting alone, eating a fruit roll-up in the cafeteria. Colin sat across from me and said, "Hey, I saw your dad working down at Walmart." My eyes lit up. I was so proud of my father. "Cool," I said. "Isn't he awesome? That's what I'm going to do when I grow up." Colin threw his head back, laughing. "You dumbass. You're going to work at Walmart, too? I guess retard runs in the family." He said it loud enough for the other kids to hear, and a couple of goons sidled up alongside Colin, smelling blood. I was mortified. This was the first time I had ever heard anyone criticize my dad's job. I had never questioned it before. Why would I? My father always assured me that he had the best job in the world. The bell rang before I could muster a reply. As I walked away, I heard Colin say, "Can you believe that retard wants to work at Walmart?" After school, I sauntered home and cried in my room. My dad knocked softly on the door and asked, "What's up, kiddo?" I dried my eyes and tried to explain between sobs. "The kids at school teased me because you were a Walmart greeter." He sat down on the bed beside me and gently rubbed my back. "They make fun of what they don't understand. They cannot comprehend how special my job is, how it has the power to make all our dreams come true. Trust me." I choked on spit and sputtered, "Okay, I'll trust you." I gave him a big hug and said, "I love you, Dad." He squeezed back and said, "I love you too, son." Afterwards, we watched a Jurassic Park and pretended we were dinosaurs. I was a velociraptor and he was the mighty T-Rex. The encounter with Colin at recess was a preview for the downhill slide my life would take. From that point forward, non-stop, inescapable bullying soon came to define my existence. Colin had an amazing talent for harassment. He skillfully turned my classmates against me, even kids I thought were friends. He came up with the hateful nickname Wally Walmart. Every time someone said that name, it felt like a mason jar of acid was tossed onto my face. I couldn't go out for lunch or walk the hallways without hearing that hateful moniker. I endured years of insults and harassment. Eventually, the constant degradation ate away at my self-esteem, and soon I began to seriously question my father's plan. I was in grade 5 when I finally built up the nerve to confront my father. "Hey, Dad," I said, "what if I don't want to become a Walmart greeter?" Initially, he looked shocked, but then he sighed and his features relaxed. He sat down beside me and said, "I knew this question would come up one day. I can't say I haven't been dreading it. Never lose sight of our goal. You have to trust me on this. It will all make sense one day." "But what if I want to do something else, like become a doctor or a fireman?" I said. He shook his head.
"Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy."
"Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?"
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples, too."
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.
"No, you must push those thoughts out of your head. You must stay focused and stick to the plan. You have a great responsibility. When you turn 18, you are going to become a Walmart greeter and work alongside me, and that is final." "But," I said, "no buts. Trust me." He never lost his temper, but I could tell I had hit a nerve. I let it drop then, but the thought continued to linger and fester in my mind. In grade 6, my dad started seeing this nice lady named Lois. She always came by on Friday nights, just before the weekly staff meetings. Without fail, she greeted me with a bag of assorted candies. She guessed correctly that sugar was a golden ticket to secure my approval. Then one day she stopped coming by. I recall my dad was really upset. This was extraordinarily out of character. He was always in high spirits, even after a long day at work. I finally understood my father's mood when we went to Lois's funeral. I asked what happened and was told that she had a stroke. I remember I was filling a plate with sweets at her memorial service when I heard from an adjoining room my dad arguing with a bearded man. "Murray, you got to understand, the rock needs to be fed. We had no choice." I'd seen him before. He was one of my father's co-workers. "I know," my father replied. "I just wish it didn't have to be her." "Who else then? You? Your son?" The man placed his hand on my father's shoulder, but he brushed it aside and stormed off. It was one of the few times I've ever seen my father upset. I wanted to follow him, tell him everything was going to be okay, and comfort him like he always comforted me. I had so many questions. I wanted to know what my father and the bearded man were arguing about. I wanted to know why Lois's casket was closed when she had a stroke. And I wanted to know why everything smelled so strongly of ozone. I never asked any of these questions, figuring it was not a good time. Instead, I went back to my plate of sweets. As I grew into adolescence, I took to routinely defying my father's wishes. The constant refrain of, "trust me," was growing thinner, and the elaborate fantasy he had spent my life building was crumbling. Soon I came to absolutely loathe the idea of becoming a Walmart greeter. Every time I thought about it, my mind was thrust into the nightmare gauntlet of jeers and insults hurled at me by my peers. And since my father was responsible for this, by extension, I began to hate him as well. If not for him, I would not be Wally Walmart. "There is no way I am going to become a Walmart greeter," I shouted at my 13th birthday. Since I was a social pariah, it was just the two of us. "Please, You're still young, he said. You'll understand when you're older. Trust me. No, I shouted. I know I can do better than that. Why won't you tell me what is so special about that stupid job? He paused for a moment. It almost looked like he was going to explain everything, and finally reveal the arcane truths of his so-called wonderful job. Look, he said, I cannot tell you much, you know that, but understand that standing at the front of the store is just a small part. I know what you do, I shouted. You smile and nod at people, that's it. I was screaming myself hoarse. All the resentment was pouring out. As I escalated, so did my father. No, he hollered back. You cannot comprehend the feeling of freedom that is both primal and ancient. If you just stick to the plan, touch the rock of dreams, you will experience a life that few before you have ever contemplated. Rock of dreams? What does that even mean? I demanded. He looked me right in the eyes, pursed his lips, and said, I've already said too much. When you were younger, it was so much easier. Remember, we'd play dinosaurs and you believed everything I said. I need you to remember what that was like. I need you to trust me. I'd heard that a million times. I stormed away and slammed my bedroom door behind me. The bullying followed me into high school. Now I was Wally Walmart to an even larger, more intimidating group of teenagers. And Colin was always there, like a tumor. Colin was an innovative bully. He managed to turn Wally Walmart into a song that all my classmates somehow managed to memorize. Even my math teacher accidentally referred to me once as Wally. My mind went in directions so morbid that I surprised myself. Sitting in class, I daydreamed about all the unspeakably horrible things that I wanted to do to Colin. In biology, I remembered giving Colin a case of Ebola and watching as he bled out from every orifice. In math class, I fantasized stabbing him in the eye with the pointy end of a compass, then slitting his throat with a sharpened protractor. In gym class, I envisioned Colin being pummeled with dodgeballs, pleading for mercy, as all my tormentors turned on him. My favorite murder fantasy, one that I kept revisiting, involved me turning into a velociraptor and ripping Colin into tattered, bloody shreds. Imagining his agonized screams brought me a degree of peace that was wholly lacking in my life. I was in the middle of a fantastic death scenario when Colin brought me tumbling back to reality. Hey, Shitstain, he said. I saw your dad at Walmart again. He waved at me and I popped in the bird. What do you think about that? I tried to ignore him. I hated Colin so much, but I hated my father more for providing Colin with all his degrading ammunition. I was on the cusp of finishing high school when my father passed away. In the weeks prior to his death, I was so overcome with resentment that we barely spoke. Despite sharing a house with him, I would avoid eye contact and pretend he was a piece of furniture. And on the few occasions we did speak, he would do his best to insinuate into the conversation my future as a Walmart greeter. Invariably, this would piss me off, and I would return to mentally erasing him from my reality. Then came the heart attack, and the time we had left together was counted in days. When I came to the hospital to visit him, I knew that it might be the last time we would ever speak. I was afraid he was going to bring up the job again, and that I would overreact. I did not want our last words together to be an argument. I trembled as I entered his hospital room. I saw that he was awake, and he tried sitting up, but the effort was too great. He settled back down heavily. I came closer and sat down beside him. He wheezed as he struggled to speak. I'm sorry, son. I know your life hasn't been easy, and I know a lot of that blame falls on my shoulders. He started coughing, and his whole body convulsed. He continued, I have held back on telling you the secrets of my job. I know you feel like I have been deceiving you, that for your whole life I have been defending a dead-end garbage job. I felt my blood rush, and I pursed my lips. He saw that I was becoming furious, and with the last bit of his energy, he raised his hand. I understand your rage, your fury. I just want you to know that, to despite withholding information. I have never deceived you. The job is truly the key to unlocking your dreams. That was too much. I couldn't stand it anymore. Even now on his deathbed, he continued to reiterate the same crap. Without another word, I stormed out of the room. That was the last time I spoke with him. Later that day, he was struck by a second heart attack, the one that ended his life. Now without my father, I was alone. When I turned 18 a few months later, I felt lost. I had long taken for granted all the wonderful things my father did for me. He bought and prepared all our meals and provided a roof over my head. Most of all, he loved me, and despite my adolescent belligerence, I loved him too. I missed him dearly, and I regretted being such an unrepentant dickhead. With my father gone, I was on my own without a life preserver. It was time to enter the workforce, but all I had was my high school diploma. There aren't a lot of options out there for people without a degree. Even dishwashing and landscaping required references and 2 years minimum experience. I handed out my resume to dozens of businesses without a single callback. After my father's death, I had time to reflect on his life, and soon I developed a degree of empathy that was absent while he was alive. I realized in hindsight how rough his life truly was. He was a single parent raising a kid with a minimum wage job. He was trapped in a less than ideal career that he kept for my sake, to keep me fed with a roof over my head, and I was less than ungrateful. I shunned him for his sacrifice. It wasn't his fault I was teased in school. It was Colin's. Maybe I should have stood up to the bullies instead of passively enduring their blows. I was a coward and always ready to blame my father for my failings. I was pondering my situation when I got a phone call. "Hey, is this Murray's kid? Want a job?" It was one of my dad's co-workers. I recognized his voice as the bearded man from the funeral. I'd spent much of my life digging in my heels and actively rejecting the idea, and yet I was desperate. I needed a job or soon I would be homeless. A part of me thought that maybe if I took this job, I could make amends to my father for the way I treated him. So I put aside years of pent-up loathing to become a Walmart greeter. On my first day, they gave me a name tag and a used uniform that smelled like new sweat and old milk. I was brought into a claustrophobic office and was forced to watch a dull training video. I felt like the narrator was talking down to me. "Be polite to the customers, always smile, and try to make a non-hostile amount of eye contact." My new supervisor brought me to the staff room. He said he was giving me my father's old locker. I saw the name. Murray. Still taped next to an old combination lock. Inside it was empty except for a jet black plastic Tyrannosaurus Rex. I didn't cry, but I wanted to. Then I was ushered towards the front automatic doors to finally commence my career as a Walmart greeter. And you know what? It was exactly how I thought it would be. I smiled and nodded at hundreds of disinterested people. There were no surprises. "This is it," I wondered to myself. It was easy money, albeit extremely boring. Initially, I thought it wasn't so bad, but then Colin came in. "Hey, look who it is. It's freaking Wally Walmart. Like father, like son. Man, you're as pathetic as your old man." I have never been so instantly furious in my entire life. I wanted to strike him down with a volley of blows and stab him in the face with a dull steak knife. Instead, I did what the training video said. I smiled and nodded. He laughed and said, "Hang in there, numbnuts. You got a lifetime of smiling and nodding ahead of you." "Oh man, this is fantastic. I was worried that after graduation I'd never see you again. Now I can visit you every day. I'll tell everyone that Wally Walmart has a job at Walmart." He grabbed a handcart, and I heard him cackling as he disappeared into the bowels of the store. By the end of the day, I was a wreck. All my suspicions were confirmed. The job sucked. There was nothing magical about it. My dreams were not coming true. Part of me still hoped that maybe my dad was right. Maybe there was some aspect to this job that was extraordinary. But then Colin's crap-eating grin intruded, and I felt nothing but shame. I was about to head home when one of the other greeters stopped me. "Hey, where are you going? You're going to miss the staff meeting." It was the bearded man. "Why, okay, yeah, sure," I said. I was seriously contemplating not showing up the next day, but I was too fatigued to offer any resistance when he gave me a nudge outside. In the parking lot, we found a lineup of a dozen people in Walmart vests climbing onto an old-school bus. The bearded man hollered, "Hey, everyone, this is Mari's kid." Everyone's eyes lit up. One of the greeters said, "You're in for a hell of a night, son." And another said, "We sure miss your father, but don't worry. You'll see him again soon." I didn't know what that meant. I was confused and tired and offered no resistance to being ushered onto the bus. As the bus drove us further out of town, my curiosity began to grow. I wondered where we were going and why everyone was so excited. Moreover, why wasn't the staff meeting back at Walmart in the clearly marked staff room? Soon the bus turned onto a winding dirt road and skirted around a dense forest. I asked the person sitting beside me, "What are we doing here?" They laughed and said, "We're going to make our dreams come true." I didn't push further. I felt nervousness flutter inside my chest. Soon we neared a large gate that swung open, allowed the bus to enter. We traveled through a dense corridor of foliage. Finally, the bus stopped and everyone poured out. I hesitantly stepped out of the bus and scanned my surroundings. I was surprised to find that we were in the middle of an open meadow with no buildings to be seen, just an impenetrable wall of trees. About 100 feet away from the bus, at the centermost point of the meadow, was a minivan-sized hunk of volcanic rock. Everyone walked towards it, and not wanting to be left behind, I followed. As I drew closer, the stones seemed to emit ever so slightly a dull neon green glow. The distinct smell of ozone filled the air. The bearded man saw my confusion and broke off from the group. "What are we doing here?" I asked. He gave me a hearty pat on the back and said, "Your dad would be so proud to see you here. Watch this." He pointed towards an older gentleman, who I recognized as one of the other greeters. His eyes were tightly closed and he wore a huge grin on his face as he approached the rock. Suddenly I heard a loud snap and the old man stumbled backwards. He stood back up and brushed himself off. He opened his eyes and shouted, "Supper time!" The bearded man tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Look behind you." I turned around and I felt my grip on reality unhinge for a moment. Where before there was nothing but grass, was a spectacular dining room table, decked out with the finest spread of food I have ever seen. There were half a dozen sumptuous multi-tiered cakes, and a steaming plate of a duck à l'orange, and enough lobster to feed a platoon. "How the hell did that happen?" I gasped. Once again, the bearded man pointed at another co-worker. This time it was a woman. She wore the same overjoyed look on her face, with her eyes squeezed shut. The same procedure repeated. When she touched the rock, there was a loud snap and she fell backwards. Then, seemingly out of nowhere, an older gentleman appeared. I didn't recognize him as a co-worker, and he was not with the original group. When she saw him, her eyes lit up like a Christmas tree. "Oh, Stanley, it is so good to see you." They rushed towards each other and held each other in a long embrace. Then, from an unseen speaker, music began to play. The pair immediately took this as a cue to start ballroom dancing. The bearded man turned to me and said, "Your turn." "My turn," I stammered. "What do I do?" "Just close your eyes and approach the rock," the bearded man said, "and your dreams will come true." My mind did not want to process what was occurring around me. The logical part of my brain kept shouting that this was all some elaborate ruse, or maybe some misguided hazing ritual enacted to put the new guy in his place. But then the irrational part reminded me that my father repeated over and over again that the job would make my dreams come true. Curiosity got the better of me, so I walked up to the rock and cautiously reached out my hand. I felt all the hairs on the back of my arms suddenly go erect, and a disorienting feeling of vertigo washed over me. The smell of ozone became overwhelming, almost choking. When my fingertips finally made contact with the rock, I felt a sudden static shock and I stumbled backwards. "What happened?" I tried to say, but my mouth couldn't properly form the words. Instead, I delivered a strange, bestial honk. My entire body felt wrong, like all the proportions I'd grown used to had once shifted out of place. The bearded man grinned at me and said, "Turn around." I obeyed, and behind me was a large mirror. I looked at my reflection and gasped. I transformed into a velociraptor. I had to be at least 2 meters long from snout to tail, and 2 meters tall. I held up my hands and found that my fingers had been replaced by terrifying 3-inch-long claws. I did not resemble the tiny, real-life feathered velociraptors known to paleontology. Instead, I was the artificial beast that existed solely in the movie Jurassic Park. "What the hell is happening to me?" I shouted. Surrounding me was a ring of Walmart greeters, all beaming with joy. I panicked. I needed to get out of there now. I broke away from the crowd and took off down the same road the bus came in on. Beside me, the trees rushed by in a dark green blur. I couldn't believe the speed as I rushed towards the front gate. My path was blocked and there was no way around, so I backpedaled, increased my speed, and jumped right over the gate. Once more, I was back on the road. I didn't know where else to go but back home, so I headed in that direction. Even though it was getting darker, I was confident I knew the way. Now on the open road, I sprinted as fast as a car. I was terrified, and I felt my heart machine gun in my chest. However, the more I ran, the more amazing I felt. This experience was really something else, something extraordinary, something I could only dream about. Then, like a flashbang, a message thrust itself into my brain. "Feed me." I stopped and skidded to a halt. "What the hell was that?" I wondered. I began running forward when once again the intrusive thought struck me like a seizure. "Feed me." I continued running, but now I no longer felt the urge to go home. Instead, overwhelmingly, some internal drive compelled me to make a detour to Colin's house. Soon I was in the alley that ran adjacent to Colin's home. I hid myself in a row of hedges and peered into his backyard. I heard barking and found him playing with his dog. I stuck my long, scaly snout out of the bushes. Suddenly, the dog looked in my direction and froze. An angry snarl followed. Colin bent over to pat his dog. "What is it, bud?" Slowly, the remainder of my massive bulk emerged from the bushes. "What the hell?" Colin shouted as he jumped into the air, falling hard on his ass. I inched closer and closer to his prone and panicked form. I was going to enjoy this. I raised my weaponized claws and saw terror blanket Colin's face. It was the most beautiful thing I'd seen in my life. Then I tore him to shreds as his dog barked helplessly. I realized I was covered head to claw in Colin's blood. Bringing all this gore home would be a terrible idea, so I ran back to the woods. I found the gate and once more leapt over it and made my way towards the rock. For years I dreamed of all the horrible things I would do to Colin. I should have felt ashamed of what I had done, but I didn't. The intrusive message of feed me was gone, and now I felt an overwhelming sensation of pleasure and satiety. As I approached the rock, I was greeted by a round of applause. "You did it," the bearded man shouted. "The rock is satisfied and will not need to feed for a few more years." He patted me on my long lizard back. "You've got a promising career as a Walmart greeter." Previously, that thought would have sent me into an apoplectic rage, but now everything was different. Now I felt pride. The bearded man had one more thing to say. "There is someone here to see you." I looked behind him and saw towering over us a life-sized, jet-black Tyrannosaurus Rex wearing a gigantic blue Walmart vest. "Dad, is that you?"
Your Honor, we the jury find the defendant Sweet Tango Apples guilty on all counts of being the crispiest, sweetest, zestiest, most delicious tasting apple you can buy.
Order! Order in this courtroom! Bailiff, come back here. Where are you going?
I'm going with them. I want some Sweet Tango Apples too.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.